Good evening. It started in the Chamber of Commerce, although a great many folks in Kalamazoo had been talking about it. Why should politics enter into the election of city officials? How could Kalamazoo be put on a more business-like basis? What about the mounting city debt? And what was this new plan of city government that Galveston and Des Moines and Dayton were trying? It was an era of reform. Political change was in the air, in the cities, the states, and the nation. A great war was raging in Europe, but in the year 1916, that seemed far away and not likely to affect America. The more immediate interest of the people was centered in the upcoming presidential elections, which brought to mind again the question of why city government had to get mixed up in national politics. The Chamber of Commerce had a committee on better city government, chaired by Frank Ryan. In that year, 1916, a study committee was set up, headed by Dr. W.E. Upjohn, founder of the head of the Upjohn Company, and a man highly regarded throughout the community. In the thorough manner of a scientist, Dr. Upjohn sought to explore every plan and system then in use. The records show that he invited to Kalamazoo Dr. Lent Upson, director of the Detroit Bureau of Municipal Research, to explain the Toledo Plan. From this study, the movement for a new city charter broadened out and became a community-wide matter. After it had been talked about throughout the city, the voters went to the polls on the second day of April, 1917, and approved the appointment of a commission of 9 citizens to draw up a new city charter. Now that date is interesting, April the 2nd, 1917, the same day that President Woodrow Wilson went before Congress and asked for a declaration of war against Germany. The people of Kalamazoo that day must have been torn between their municipal and their national problems. The members of the Charter Commission were Carl L. Larson, William H. Stewart, Charles S. Campbell, John L. Hollander, Charles H. Gill, Fred M. Hodge, William Shakespeare, Jr., Claire H. Stearns, and Dr. William E. Upjohn. The new charter was drawn up with a provision for a city commission of 7 elected at large, a city manager, the initiative, referendum, and recall, nonpartisan elections, and a new feature, proportional representation. Now, this had been adopted in 1915 by Ashtabula, Ohio, and in 1917 by Boulder, Colorado. Kalamazoo was the third city to adopt it in the country. Under this system, instead of placing check marks on his ballot, the voter indicated his first choice by placing the figure 1 before the name of his favorite. His second choice was indicated by the figure 2, and so on down through 7. The method of counting the ballots was pretty complicated. You took the number of the commissioners, 7, and added 1, that made 8. Then you took the total number of ballots cast, let's say, for example, 8,000, and divided that by your first figure, 8, and then you added 1. That brought you out with the figure 1,001. Now, if any candidate got that many ballots, he was elected. His surplus ballots were allotted to the other candidates by noting the second choices on each. Likewise, the second choices of the lowest candidates were noted, and their ballots were transferred. All extremely complicated, what? And you ask for what purpose? Well, the object was to provide representation for minority groups. Suppose the people living in a certain section of the city had, let's say, 1,500 votes. If they all marked their candidate first choice, they would thereby elect him in an election where 10 or 11,000 votes were cast. They would have at least one representative on the city commission. The same might go for organized labor or any other sizable group. That was the idea behind proportional representation. Well, the people of the city, after debating this new charter, went to the polls on February the 4th, 1918, and they adopted it. The vote was very light, due no doubt to the fact that we were in the midst of a very bitter war, and many people were not thinking much about city affairs. Out of around 12,000 registered voters, only about 2,700 turned out. About 1,900 voted for the new charter, and about 800 against it. On the first day of April, 1918, one day short of a year after the voters had authorized a charter commission, the first city commission under the new charter was chosen. 2 members of the charter commission were included in the first city commission, chosen by proportional representation under the charter, Dr. Upjohn and Mr. Shakespeare. The others elected were A.B. Conable, George E. Martin, A.J. Todd, Paul T. Butler, and Truxton Talbot. That was our first city commission. This commission, elected on April 1st, 1918, took office April 8th, and they served until November 1919. The charter wisely provided for city elections every 2 years, in the odd-numbered years when there was no national or state election. The major role played in this campaign for a new city charter by the Chamber of Commerce is indicated by the fact that Dr. Upjohn, who was president of the chamber in 1918, was chosen mayor, and that the Chamber of Commerce secretary, Harry Freeman, was named by the commission in July as the first city manager. The new commission soon had things humming. Within 12 months, it had divided all the city ordinances into six codes and made the first revision since 1897. It maintained the civil service system which had been set up. It accepted 17 acres from Dr. Upjohn as Upjohn Park. It laid out a fire and water program that restored the city to the insurance underwriter's second class. It redistricted the city's 14 precincts into 32. It investigated central milk pasteurization and delivery under city auspices. It revamped the financial policy, revised accounting systems, hired the city's first two police women, established a city fuel yard, started a survey of commercial lighting expansion by the city, created a purchasing bureau, and reorganized the police bureau. Quite a record. When the new city commission took office, it required between 15% and 20% of every tax dollar to pay the interest on the city's bonded indebtedness, which then amounted to $681,000. The new commissioners decided to reduce that debt, and ultimately to put this city on a cash basis. As a starter, they raised the tax rate from 6.5 to 8.5 mils. During the first 2 years, the debt was reduced by more than one-third. But prices went higher, and the costs of city government were rising. There were many needed improvements. The tax rate was boosted up to 9 mils in 1920, and then, for 1921, a newly elected commission raised the tax rate to the hitherto unheard-of figure of 13.5 mils. The commissioners justified their action by claiming that it was necessary to build up a depreciation and reserve fund and to pay off another $100,000 of that debt. But they were asking for trouble, and they got it. Before telling you about that trouble, which came in 1921, we must mention an important development in 1920. Proceedings in the courts were started by a local law firm, acting for a former city alderman, to declare the new charter unconstitutional because of its provision for elections by proportional representation. The case was heard in the circuit court here, and the presiding judge declared the provision unconstitutional. The case was then carried to the Supreme Court of the state and docketed as Wattles versus Upjohn. On September 20th, 1920, the Supreme Court upheld the decision of the circuit court and threw out proportional representation. The reasoning of the court was that proportional representation violated the constitutional provision that no city or village shall have the right to abridge the right of elective franchise. Now, that was the first court decision in the country on the constitutionality of proportional representation, and therefore it's of broad national importance, and it effectively checked the adoption of the plan elsewhere, especially after the highest California court took a similar stand 2 years later. Fortunately, the court stipulated that the remainder of Kalamazoo's new charter was okay. Revisions were made in the charter, and a new commission was elected in November 1920. That was the one that increased the tax rate to 13.5 mils. Well, almost at once, the city was engulfed in a debate on the merits of the new charter and the pay-as-you-go plan. It was argued pro and con all over the town before clubs and organizations. The Chamber of Commerce conducted a poll which showed that its members overwhelmingly supported the commission manager form of government, the city manager personally, and the 1921 budget. Charges and countercharges made the rounds. The Gazette carried columns of letters from the public. Finally, a petition signed by more than 4,000 names went to the city commission asking for another charter revision. On April 5th, 1921, the city voted again. The first question was whether there should be another charter revision. The voters said yes, by the margin of 5,311 to 3,443. Should Kalamazoo return to the aldermanic form of government? That was the next question. And 4,025 voters said yes, and 3,467 said no. It looked like all the hard work and planning for 5 years had been thrown away. City manager Harry Freeman, who had proposed the new tax rate and was a staunch backer of the pay-as-you-go plan, regarded himself as repudiated by the voters and resigned. Dr. Upjohn also resigned from the commission. A new charter commission was appointed to try to translate the wishes of the voters into a new frame of government. Mrs. Mabel Balch, wife of ex-Mayor James B. Balch, was chosen chairman of the commission. The new document would have returned Kalamazoo to the aldermanic form of government and would have imposed a tax limitation, though in some ways it was rather forward-looking. William H. Peck, a member of this charter commission, repudiated it publicly before it came to a vote. The Gazette came out editorially in favor of the commission manager system as then in operation. The turnout election day was again small, but the proposed charter was rejected, meaning that Kalamazoo kept its commission manager government. The backers of the aldermanic plan asked that the question be resubmitted at the November election, but City Attorney Marvin Skaberg advised that it would be illegal to submit the same proposal within the next 2 years. The new City Commission, elected November 8, 1921, sought to pacify the opposition by compromise. The tax rate was lowered to 12 mils, and $140,000 worth of sewer improvements were to be paid for by the old expedient of issuing bonds. Again, the friends of a pay-as-you-go policy must have groaned. But subsequent events proved that the method of city financing, for which Dr. Upjohn and Harry Freeman labored so hard, was not to be abandoned. The bonds were slowly retired, until in 1930 there was only $35,000 outstanding. Then came the Great Depression, and the city faced the problem of providing relief funds. The debt zoomed upward to almost $300,000 in 1932 as a result. But again, this was only temporary. In 1937, outgoing Mayor Paul H. Todd touched a match to the last bond, and Kalamazoo became the only city of over 50,000 population in the nation to be entirely free from bonded indebtedness in its general fund. The opposition in 1921 was further allayed by four charter amendments proposed by a charter revision commission and adopted by the voters. One of these provided that the candidate for city commissioner receiving the largest vote should be declared mayor. The charter originally provided that the commission should choose the mayor. The second amendment put the health department directly under the city commission. The third empowered the commission to adopt a zoning ordinance, and the fourth corrected typographical and other minor errors in the city charter. Thus, the long struggle to give Kalamazoo a modern, business-like government reached its end. There never has been a serious threat to the commission-manager form of government since. With halting step, community leaders and the general public worked out in a democratic manner that form of government which seemed most reasonable and most suitable. Next Monday, we shall return to an earlier epoch in the city's political history, the great battle between the Democrats and the Whigs between 1836 and 1840. Now this is Willis Dunbar bidding you a most pleasant good night.